Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the call and talk show about health and natural medicine. It's January 29th, 2020. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician with my co-host Ron Meniza. If you'd like to participate in the conversation about natural medicine, you can call us at 860-486-9487. That's 860-486-9487. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensed of this station. All right, so our first neato topic of the day: should you skip breakfast? And that's all going to be that's going to be a controversial question. Some people think we should, and there's a humorous feud going on, believe it or not, between I know you want to hear this, but between Dr. Oz and Mark Wahlberg. They debate whether breakfast should be a thing or not. And they've been battling it on Instagram for weeks, apparently. The two of them are going back and forth. And, Dr. Oz is not a fan of breakfast, and Mark Wahlberg is. And, you know, Mark Wahlberg works out a lot and likes to pump iron and likes to get ripped. And Dr. Oz likes to get a reasonable amount of exercise that works for him. So I think he's in the field of most people, although I'm betting that Dr. Oz is fairly consistent in his exercising, whereas Mark Wahlberg has a plan. He has an exercise plan that gets him, you know, a lot of muscle mass and and getting ripped. But, you know, Mark Wahlberg is doing roles on TV and movies that he gets to show off that physique. And Dr. Oz, that's not really his thing. So anyway, they're throwing, I think it's supposed to be a humorous feud. I hope it's a humorous feud, but this is why they're going back and forth. Dr. Oz interestingly thinks that it's a marketing hype that you have to eat breakfast. And the fact of the matter is, he says something that I always say: if you wake up in the morning and you're not hungry, don't eat until you're hungry. Does that make sense?
That makes all the sense in the world.
Right. In fact, as a general principle, eat when you're hungry. Don't eat when you're not. When I give people my list of, I have an intermittent fasting handout, and the only thing on the intermittent fasting handout that has directly to do with intermittent fasting is to instruct people to eat within that window, to find their, you know, 8-hour window that they do eat and their 16-hour window in which they do not eat. And that's the only bit of advice on that handout that has to do actually with intermittent fasting. All the rest of it is common sense, sensible advice. For example, eat when you're hungry. Don't eat when you're not.
Why wouldn't you eat when you're hungry?
Right.
As long as you have the ability to. I should say that.
Exactly. No, you would eat when you're hungry. But a lot of people eat because it's time to eat. And that is one of the reasons for obesity in the United States. Because unlike other countries in the world, people eat because it's time to eat. Hmm. As opposed to eating when they're hungry. Now, there is an issue with that. So suppose you have to be at work at 8 a.m. and your body clock doesn't turn on and say, I want food until 9 a.m. Should you front load your breakfast even though you're not going to have time to eat later in the day? Or should you just wait until you're hungry? What I do personally, quite honestly, because I've said this before, I enjoy eating. Eating for part of me, obviously I need to eat to make myself healthy, but I also enjoy eating. Eating when I'm not hungry doesn't feel good. So why would I do it? I'd rather have the pleasure of eating, which is another reason I taught myself not to stuff myself. Because I have a shutoff switch. Thank God I have a shutoff switch. I feel really bad for people and, you know, feel for people who struggle with binge eating disorder where they really don't have a shutoff switch or they override their shutoff switch. And there are eating disorders where people do that. But I feel very grateful that I do have a shutoff switch and that, you know, even if it's the most delicious thing in the world, I'm not going to eat it if I'm not hungry. So right. I'm just not going to do that. And I would rather be a little extra hungry while working than eat when I'm not hungry. Now, the little extra hungry while working doesn't always work out so well, which is why I keep snacks in my desk. And sometimes in between patients, I have to take a bite of something. And so I just do that. Every so often, if it's gotten to be too late and my patients look at me and I have patients who've been seeing me for a long time, they look at me and say, "Did you eat?" And I'm like, "What are you, a Jewish mother?" And they may or may not be Jewish mothers, but they look at me and say, "Did you eat?" And I'll say, "Well, you know, I haven't had anything for a few." They're like, "Are you hungry right now?" I'm like, "Yeah." "Well, while we're sitting and talking, eat something."
Good for your patients.
I know. I had two patients in the last 2 weeks do that to me. And they were patients who I've known for a long time, and they were perfectly happy. And in fact, one of them, I have these beautiful Turkish figs I keep as snacks in my desk, and she got to have a Turkish fig. So just know that if you ever happen to be my patient, you might be offered a Turkish fig or some goji berries, just so you know. If I'm going to offer a patient something to eat, I want it to be something that's interesting and good for them. But I keep a stash of goji berries in my desk because I want people to try them, and people are surprised at how good they are. So now I've gone off on a tangent about goji berries. I'll get back to that later. So why are they having this humorous food? Dr. Oz, he's talking about the potential weight management benefits of intermittent fasting. And he says that Mark has bought into the dogma of breakfast. He said that on a show on TV. He believes all the hype that you have to have breakfast. Another big study came out that says you're better off you intermittent fast. That way, the best way you know is skipping breakfast. And before I go any further, I'm looking at this paragraph going,
I sighed.
This is very interesting. Yes, there's good research on intermittent fasting, but so I don't know if this is supposed to be a humorous feud just to get people talking, or if he really thinks that Mark Wahlberg is serious about this.
We're talking.
We are talking. You're absolutely right. So is it is it just to be silly to get people talking about it? Because I'm looking at this. It's funny to see them going back and forth. See somebody like, you know, Dr. Oz, who's this this interesting gentleman. He's a guy of Turkish descent who's a cardiologist. And Dr. Oz is very excitable and he's very knowledgeable, and he really wants to help people with knowledge about basic health principles and how to eat healthfully and get exercise and do things that are helpful for them. And Mark Wahlberg is, you know, got his own agenda, you know, being one of the Wahlbergs. I guess he was his family was the model for that show Entourage. And,
is that right?
Yeah. And they're all, his family is some, they're classic Bostoners. That's not
okay.
What do you call people from
Bostonians?
Boston? They're classic Bostonians.
Yes.
So, you know,
or
they work
beaners,
out.
Also known as beaners.
Yeah. That's what the family is. Right. Grandpa. Time for supper.
Yeah.
Beer.
Give me a beer.
Roast beef. And some beers.
While you're at it, move my car.
Right. Exactly. There was that very funny, there was a series of commercials where it was, I don't remember, it was a cable company or a satellite company that was, that had a classic Boston family with classic Boston accents, you know, barking at each other. And it was very funny.
It was. I'm trying to remember what that was.
It was a satellite TV. I don't remember. Anyway, so there was a recent scholarly article published in the New England Journal of Medicine, which suggests that fasting may aid long-term weight loss and could allow dieters to lower their blood pressure naturally over time. But research is largely divided over the importance of breakfast. And here's what I say. Can't you both be right? Because Wahlberg works out so much, he needs the fuel. He needs that fuel from food, the little mini meals that he eats every 2 hours. So here's the deal. So again, before I go any further, my opinion is they are both right. And in fact, whatever, you know what the best system for you is for in terms of your eating and your timing and how much you should eat?
I'm so excited. I know the answer to this. The one that works for you.
Very good.
Oh, how about that? We've said that enough,
exactly.
Haven't we?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm saying this feud between the two of them is humorous. Now, he may be right that intermittent fasting may be a good plan for most Americans, because most Americans, quite frankly, do not work out like Mark Wahlberg. If Mark Wahlberg is doing, you know, an hour or more of weight training most days of the week. That is not what most Americans do. I don't know what the latest statistics are, and maybe you can look into this, Ron, but like, first of all, what are the statistics on how many Americans get exercise? How many Americans get exercise more than 3 days a week? And how many Americans get enough exercise to make a difference in their health? I think the number is scary. It's less than half, because I know that most of my patients, they don't get, if they are exercising, it's not intensely, and they do stop and start. You know, they if they are exercising, maybe they went skiing last weekend, but they haven't done anything this week. They don't have exercise as part of the routine, and that is what you see with most people. So as a practitioner, you're begging most people to get on some kind of a plan. Whether it's just going for a nice walk every few days or doing a little bit of yoga, you're really talking to people about just getting started. You're not generally talking to people about modifying their already existing exercise plan. So what'd you find?
This is actually higher than I thought it was going to be.
Okay.
Only 23% of Americans get enough exercise, a new report says. And this comes from, it appears to be, a Time magazine article.
So when you say 23% of Americans get enough exercise, to make a difference in their health?
This is according to the CDC.
Okay.
Okay. Less than a quarter of Americans are meeting all national physical activity guidelines, according to a new report from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's National Center for Health Statistics, NCHS.
So, yeah, less than a quarter of people are meeting those standards.
Right.
Yeah.
Federal physical activity guidelines recommend that adults get at least 150 minutes of moderate or 75 minutes of vigorous exercise each week.
Yeah.
In addition to muscle strengthening activities at least twice a week. But according to the new NCHS report, which drew on 5 years of data from the National Health Interview Survey, only about 23% of adults ages 18 to 64 are hitting both of those marks. Another 32% met one, but not both, and almost 45% did not hit either benchmark.
All right, so say it again. What were the two benchmarks? Repeat them.
So the two benchmarks were vigorous exercise, 75 minutes of vigorous exercise each week, mm-hmm. and at least 150 minutes of moderate exercise. Oh, that says here, at least 150 minutes of moderate or 75 minutes of vigorous exercise each week.
So 75
minutes.
In
addition to muscle strengthening exercises, activities,
yeah.
which were at least twice a week.
So I do your extreme spin class, so I'm good.
I was going to say one class with Ron and you're all done. That's
right.
It, on Sunday.
Well, one extreme spin.
One extreme spin class.
Right.
And you pretty much have hit
one extreme
all
spin
the benchmarks.
Or two Thursday morning or two
right.
what,
right.
AM spins. Yeah.
Right. So, I tell people when they're coming in to, and we get a lot of newbies at the community center because they have not had, they've been off their routine for a while or whatever. Mm-hmm. They made a commitment as of the first of the year.
Yeah.
And they're, I tell them, if you can do this 2 to 3 times a week, you're going to be great. It's
yeah.
going to really make a big difference in your life.
Yeah.
And that pretty much hits the number right here and makes you fall into the 23%, other
yeah.
than the fact that you probably should be doing some strength exercises also.
So that means that 77% of Americans, when you say 23%, are getting enough exercise,
yep.
they're meeting those recommendations.
Right.
That means that 77% aren't.
Right. And it did say here another 32% met one, but not both.
Okay.
Okay.
I see.
And almost 45% did not hit either benchmark.
Right.
Okay.
So they want you to do 150 minutes of, they want you to do 75 minutes of vigorous plus 150 minutes of moderate?
No.
Either.
Either at least 150 of moderate or 75 of vigorous.
Right.
So.
And some people, but it's saying that some people do both.
It doesn't say that.
No.
The other part was muscle strengthening activities would be the other part.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
At
so you
least
have
twice
to do.
A week.
I got you. So the two things are either the 150 or the 75, 150 moderate or 75 vigorous.
75 vigorous. And
twice
muscle
a week of
strengthening
resistance training. Gotcha.
Activities at least twice a week.
Yeah.
So
right.
there you go.
Yes.
There you go. And then it says here the numbers fluctuated somewhat depending on gender, occupation, and home state. More men, roughly 27%, than women, almost 19%, met both guidelines. And both genders saw slightly higher percentages among working adults, almost 29% and 21%, respectively.
So working adults are more likely to meet the benchmarks?
The authors also added that people working in managerial or professional positions are more likely than individuals in production roles such as assembly and manufacturing to meet the standards. I can understand that.
Well, there's a reason
for that. However,
the
report looked at only at leisure time physical activity, so adults who log exercise through active jobs or communities were not included in the findings. Yeah,
right.
That's a little skewed because, you know, you take somebody who's like a line worker in a factory type situation and, you know, I've talked to people that work at a place like, I'll just pick something out, like, let's say Frito-Lay, okay?
Yeah.
Big
employer
facility that an employer in our area that makes, you know,
Fritos
things that aren't good for you and not necessarily, but anyway, they make you know, fast food or snack food. And so I remember talking to someone that worked for Frito-Lay, and he has his phone in his pocket, and it's you know, clocking his steps, and he said he walks 10 miles a day.
Woohoo!
Because the factory is so big, you
yes.
know, and he's moving around back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. That has to be included.
So he's got the, well, he's got the 150 minutes of moderate.
Oh, he's more, way more, obviously. Way, way more. But the point is that depending on your job, you know, it's like when I do those, announce those tour to the Farm to Fork Fondos.
Yes.
Those tours, I'll walk like 8 or 9 miles during one of
yes.
those. And I'm not going anywhere.
Right.
I'm just walking around
right.
the venue and that's it.
Yeah.
Same thing when I put on a cyclocross race. You
right.
know, I log 18,000 steps or something.
So
crazy.
So I encourage you, if yep. you have a job that's active, if your doctor's told you need to get more exercise and you have a job that's active and you have a smartphone, it's very easy. If you have Android, you can use Google Fit. And if you have an iPhone, you can use...
It just does it for you.
If you
have it in your pocket on an iPhone, it just records it.
It has Apple Health. And all you have
right.
to do is get into Apple Health and you'll see it. It'll be recording your steps
yep.
for you. If you like a fancy pedometer app, there are free ones too.
There's
a number of them.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is Pacer Pedometer. And there are many apps that will record your steps. If you have a Fitbit, it'll record your steps. There's free apps that are not Google Fit and Apple Health. And then there are either of those. They come with your phone. If you don't have a smartphone and you want to record your steps, you can get a pedometer. And you can probably buy pedometers almost anywhere. You can certainly get them at a sporting goods store. You
oh,
can
yeah.
certainly purchase them online, and you can very likely get them at a drugstore. Drugstores, because they're interested in health, you probably get them at the drugstore, and you could probably get them at, a store. I don't know about supermarkets. Depending on the supermarket you're going to, you can probably get them. But any good-sized store that has any interest in health will probably carry them, especially... And you know, if you're going to a supermarket that has a pharmacy in it, they might have it too. So you can look for it in any of those places.
And without mentioning prices, because we can't mention prices, you can get a pedometer for less than a value meal at a local crummy restaurant. So they're not expensive in any way.
Right.
You know, so it's really it's a great investment.
Yeah, right. So anyway, if you want to count your steps, the other thing you can do, if you don't have any of those, you could literally count your steps.
You can do that. That would...
That'd be hard to do.
It would be... it would be hard to do, and
yeah.
it would be... That might work on your brain a little hard.
That'd be very hard. No,
mind-numbing.
I like using a pedometer. But, I mean, that's something you can do. So if you're wondering... Because if you're getting... because the other thing that the pedometer apps will do is it'll tell you both how long you went and how much time you spent at
mm-hmm.
it. Well, actually, it won't necessarily do that. I shouldn't say that because the pedometer apps will allow you to do a workout. So it'll allow you to turn it on and tell you how long you were at it. And so... And so if you turn on the workout feature for, say, pacer pedometer, then you can find out how much time you spent at it. But, you know, if you're, remember we said that those values that there was a study that was done that showed that you get the minimum amount of steps a day to get health benefits is 4,400, and there are no additional health benefits over 7,500. So that 10,000, that 10,000 steps thing was a number that was put out by a Japanese pedometer company. So you don't have to worry about 10,000. And yet you may be working somewhere where you are getting all of those steps, and then you're getting your 150 minutes a week that with no problem. So getting back to Dr. Oz and Mark Wahlberg fighting about whether you should eat breakfast or not. And there's a question, can't you both be right? Of course you can. My feeling is you can both be right. Dr. Oz says it comes down to he thinks that endurance can be prolonged during a fast, and the fact that early humans didn't have any food in the morning either. And his point to Mark Wahlberg, as great as he looks now, for the average human being to get there is difficult. That's true. I mean, I don't think I will ever look like Mark Wahlberg. So most of us think the smart thing is to skip breakfast, work, and work out as much as you can, maybe not as hard as Mark Wahlberg does, and you're going to look better because you're going to burn fat and not the food that's already in your stomach. So if you can spend a significant amount of time in the day not eating, you're going to force yourself to burn fat. That's the principle behind the ketogenic diet. You spend time in a low carbohydrate situation so that you force your body to burn fat. So me, I'm going to have a hard time doing a super low carb diet because when I do, I don't feel well. But I can do intermittent fasting. Like, you know, today I haven't eaten anything. Well, I don't know if I can say that because I did have some fluid that had some calories and I had some watermelon water, which is really good, by the way.
but, watermelon water.
Yeah. There's a product you can get that's called watermelon water. And it's basically, you know, pureed watermelon in water. And it's really good.
Okay.
Well, it's great because it has a lot of lycopene in it, which is a great antioxidant, and it has electrolytes in it. So you can make your own watermelon water by, pureeing watermelon and having it as a drink. And I know that big shout out to my friends Kate and Michael because they like to do that in the summer. They make a refreshing watermelon drink. Mm. And I was on one of those Farm to Fork Fondo rides once and went at one of the rest stops. They had like a watermelon slushy. They had pureed some watermelon and put mint in it. It was very good. It was very refreshing on a hot day. Okay. So in terms of other health experts, should you be skipping breakfast or not based on empirical data? So it's not entirely clear scientifically which is better. So that's funny. So they're going to have to go head-to-head at a gym and see who performs better particular activity, which makes no sense because, you know, Mark, how old is Mark Wahlberg?
I don't know.
Because Dr. Roz is 59 years old. That's interesting. Dr. Roz is only a couple years older than me.
Hmm.
Yeah. He's only 3 years older than me. I don't know. For some reason, I thought he was older than that. He just seems so erudite and knowledgeable, and he could have been in high school with me.
So you want to hear a couple more stats that go along with this
sure.
whole thing?
Sure, yes,
so
please.
Some states saw adherence rates well above the national average, while others were well below. Colorado led the pack, 32.2% of adults meeting both federal exercise guidelines. And in Mississippi, just 13.5% reported
but
meeting both.
So the most active state...
Colorado.
...is only 32%.
And when you go to Colorado, I got to say, when you go to Colorado, you go to the Colorado airport, you look around in Colorado, everyone looks fit. They look good.
What you said is that only 32% are meeting the benchmark,
right.
Which means that 68% are not.
That's amazing.
Yes. And now when you go to Mississippi, you're saying that only 13% meet the benchmark, and one of them is Skip. Hi, Skip.
Yeah.
Skip and all his friends down there. And it went up one because Skip left here and he moved to Mississippi.
Yeah.
So he made it one more person.
As far as 13.5%, it's barely scratch the surface, but yeah.
Right. So that means that what'd you say, 13.5? So that's 86.5% do not.
Right.
But, and then what's the big difference between Colorado and Mississippi?
Well, Colorado is a very outdoorsy place, for starters.
It
has a...
And that's not the main thing. That is not the main reason why there's a big difference. It's economic.
It's economic.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's socioeconomic. Yeah. People in Colorado tend to have a lot more money.
It costs
overall.
A lot more to live in Colorado. Yeah.
And Mississippi is one of the poorest states. So obesity follows poverty. What was the other thing that
does.
You said? That people in managerial positions
tend
to be more likely to meet the benchmarks than people who are not in managerial positions. And as you said, that could be skewed because they're not counting the people who are doing... they're not counting the people who are getting their activity from their jobs. But on the other hand, if you're not in a managerial position and you're in a clerical position where you're not getting a lot of exercise, these are the people in managerial positions may have more control over their time and they have more money and they may also have more education. And so they are able to construct their day so that they can set themselves up to get their workouts. You know,
right.
So that's another piece of the difference.
And I have another piece here also, which says, with some exceptions, states on the West Coast and in the Northeast tended to have higher percentages of residents meeting the guidelines than states in the South.
Right.
Residents in the states of the Southeast had particularly low rates, high levels of unemployment and disability or poor health in a state correlated with lower rates of meeting exercise guidelines.
Of course, if you're going to have a disability. So Dr. Roz says you should absolutely cancel breakfast, that we should eat a larger meal closer to noon.
I don't agree with that.
Well, it doesn't work for you.
No.
So it doesn't work for you, but again, you're an outlier. You have to understand that what is it? So you're not obese. In fact, you may be you're probably at the low end of your BMI. I mean, of healthy BMI.
I'm almost unhealthy as far as that
goes, so
according to those numbers.
So your BMI is very low. So you're an outlier. I mean, most Americans are overweight. You know, 70% of Americans are overweight, and a percentage of those are obese. So you're unusual, and you're unusual in that you have a very high metabolism. So the advice to not eat breakfast applies to most people. And it certainly does not apply to a subset of people. And so it's going to work for a lot of people. And if I have a person who comes in who's overweight, I have to talk to them about eat when you're hungry, don't eat when you're not. and this waiting to exercise until I'm hungry, that works for me. I have a much more average build and a much more average metabolism. And I have, like, aside from that watermelon water, I haven't eaten anything today. And I'm going to wait to eat until I feel like, yep, I'm ready to eat. You get out of bed and you're ready to eat, but that's because you have a very high metabolism. And I have to, for you to not agree with it, really, it doesn't work for you, but it does work for other people. And please, people, if you wake up and you are very hungry, you should eat. That's what we're saying. No matter who you are, we're not saying that. So for Dr. Oz to say that nobody should eat breakfast, I don't agree with that at all. Because the answer, if you come in and you are happy and healthy and you have found that what works for you is to have two small meals every 2 hours and you're fit and healthy and all your numbers are good and you're not overweight and you're having a great life, why on earth would I tell you to change that? I would not. Of course I wouldn't. But that's not mostly what I see. What I mostly see is people who are stressed, who are eating convenience foods, who are not eating enough produce, who are not eating just enough simple foods. They're eating a lot of, you know, processed packaged foods, or they're running through drive-thrus. And that's what I mostly see. And also people who are unfortunately having to front load because they don't know when they're going to be able to grab something during the day. And if there are ways that you can figure that out, because it's true, if you're one of those people, you might benefit from intermittent fasting. And again, when you intermittent fast, one of the things you can't, that doesn't mean you can't have your coffee. So I have to remind people of that, that in the rules of intermittent fasting, that doesn't mean nothing by mouth. It absolutely doesn't mean nothing by mouth. So we're not talking about a Yom Kippur fast or a Ramadan fast where Ramadan, during the month of Ramadan, Muslim people don't have anything by mouth during the daylight hours for the whole month. And on Yom Kippur, same thing. During the day of Yom Kippur, from the start of Yom Kippur to the finish of Yom Kippur, Jewish people don't have anything at all by mouth for that whole time. That's not what you do when you intermittent fast. When you intermittent fast, you can always, did I say always? You can always have water. There are other fluids you can always have. And the reason you can have these things is because they don't raise your insulin. You can always have coffee as long as you don't have a health problem with coffee itself. But you can always have coffee. You can always have tea. You can always have any kind of herbal tea. You can always have anything from Camellia sinensis, black, green, white tea. You can always have water with Himalayan salt in it, unless you have salt-sensitive hypertension, but that's another issue. You can always have vinegar. You can always have MCT oil, and MCT oil actually has calories. But you can have MCT oil because it doesn't raise your insulin and it gives you energy. It doesn't get stored as fat. And the other thing you can have that has calories, you can have plain bone broth. And the bone broth can be seasoned. There just shouldn't be a lot of vegetables in it, but it can totally be seasoned. It can have some very low-calorie vegetables in it or just, herbs and spices in it if you want to. But bone broth is allowed too. Once again, even though it has calories, it doesn't raise your insulin and your body's not going to store it as fat. It's going to use it for structure. So all of those things you can have if you're doing an 8 hour of eating and 16 hour of fasting, you can have all of those things during the 16 hours. In fact, you should hydrate well during that time. So if you're like, you expect me to work out during during my fast? Well, yeah, if you can. If you can't, of course, don't do it. But so if you're Ron and you have to put something in your mouth before you get on the spin bike, you should do that. You absolutely should. This is not about, if Dr. Oz is saying that everybody should intermittent fast, I don't agree with that. Of course not. It doesn't work for everybody. You're an example of a person it does not work for. If you're diabetic and you're on medications for your diabetes, either if you're insulin dependent or if you're taking metformin or some other oral hypoglycemic drug, you have to be careful that you're backing up the lowering of your blood sugar with regular eating. So you may not be able to intermittent fast. And I also wonder the thing that that's a sticky situation because intermittent fast, that's exactly the kind of person that intermittent fasting could help. If you're insulin dependent, you probably can't because you have to take your insulin at certain times of day to run your metabolism. But if you are a type 2 diabetic and you're on an oral hypoglycemic, you may be able to adjust when you take those oral hypoglycemics and then do intermittent fasting. Because the whole point of intermittent fasting is that during that time, you lower your insulin. You're spending a good deal of time in a lower insulin state. And when you're in that lower insulin state, it does force your body to burn more fuel. It forces your body to spend time doing repair. It forces your body to not have the damage that high insulin causes and you can have less inflammation. One way to reduce inflammation is to fast. Fasting does help to reduce inflammation. So Dr. Oz says that, again, he explains, what if you're generally hungry for breakfast when you wake up? Dr. Oz explains it's a result of initial food withdrawal, especially if you ate a snack before bed the night before. That's silly. I'm not buying it. Because he says if you eat something late night and then you wake up hungry, that means... He basically said, and I do not agree with this, essentially he's saying, this is what he said, by the next morning when that withdrawal is happening, you're starving like a drug addict, you have to get your meds. So he's saying basically, if you wake up in the morning hungry, there's something wrong with you. I'm not buying it. I don't buy that at all. That's ridiculous. Some people wake up hungry and some don't. And for you, he's saying you, Ron, if you wake up in the morning hungry, you're a food addict.
No.
That's what I say. I'm with you there.
Give me 10 minutes with this guy.
It's ridiculous.
I mean, it's a stupid thing to say something that is that general.
Well, and it's that's right. It's dogmatic. He's saying that Mark Wahlberg has bought into the dogma of breakfast, and I'm saying that he's being dogmatic as well. That you have to be flexible, and you have to meet your patients where they're at. And you know, some people are not going to do well not eating breakfast. I will contend that most people probably will. But then the other thing you have to do is you have to go to other places in the world and see what they do. Now, mind you, what he said is that paleo people didn't eat first thing in the morning, that they got up and they did activities. They, you know, went in search of food, and they didn't necessarily get to start eating until later in the day. That may be true, but we're not paleo people. What you have to do is you have to go to other countries in the world, so where they're fitter than we are, where you don't have the rate of obesity that we have, and see what they do. Are they or aren't they eating breakfast? One of the things that you see, so for example, in France, where they're generally lower weight than we are, they get more physical activity just getting from here to there. People walk more, people don't take their cars as much, and people don't, they are less likely to eat because it's time to eat and more likely to eat because they're hungry. And they also eat smaller portions. So, you know, you get to certain places in Europe and they have that continental breakfast where you have coffee and a little bit of a roll, you know, or a croissant. And it's small. It's just a little thing. And that's all you have. And that works for a lot of people. That would work for me. Like, I have this much coffee. You can't see. Is that quarter cup of coffee.
Yeah.
And a little bit of something sweet, and I'm good. That's my breakfast.
Take your forefinger and your thumb and put them together, and that's how much coffee Fran has.
Well, and separate them slightly.
No, don't even separate them.
No, you can separate them a little bit.
You don't have much.
That's what I did yesterday. And it was very good.
And then we have to scrape you off the ceiling afterwards.
No, because I'm a CYP1A2 slow metabolizer.
But of course you are.
I'm an AA. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're an FF, I think, and I'm an AA. 1F, 1F, and I'm a 1A. I think that's right, a 1A. Anyway, whatever the CYP, whatever the slower one is, the CYP1A2 slow metabolizer, that's what I am. I actually don't know that for a fact because I haven't done my genetics to find that out for a fact, and I should do it because I will be very not surprised if I find out that my CYP1A2 is sluggish and yours is not. You know how some people can go to bed after drinking a cup of coffee?
Yeah.
That would not be me.
That would be me.
That'd be you. It would not be me.
Yeah, okay. That would be me.
Now, Nancy says she could do that. So she may be a 1A, like 1C. She may be a heterozygous. I don't know. She might be different from me. We're not twins. Anyway, so a lot of people were surprised to hear Dr. Oz's strong take on this topic. And Mark Wahlberg was also annoyed that he completely disagrees with Dr. Oz. So he says he has to have his breakfast before he works out. And again, mazel tov, Mark Wahlberg. If you have to have your breakfast before you work out, have your breakfast before you work out. And I agree with Dr. Oz. We are not, most of us are not Mark Wahlberg. Well, none of us are Mark Wahlberg. So is skipping breakfast really healthy? It hinges on whether or not you've been fasting prior to breakfast. He thinks you shouldn't eat breakfast until 3 or 4 hours until you've awakened. But again, that's going to depend on the person. He does mention a landmark report in the New England Journal of Medicine that suggests that fasting diets may help reduce the risk of cardiovascular disease over time, suggesting that intermittent fasting is healthy even if you don't lose weight. And he has a point there. He does have a point there. And the point that he makes is that, again, when you are fasting, you are in a low insulin state. And one of the things that insulin does, insulin's job is to promote growth. It also promotes fat storage. And when something promotes growth, there has to be inflammation. Insulin-like growth factor is a pro-inflammatory compound. It is a good thing to have around if you're trying to put on muscle mass. But if you have too much of it around and you're not trying to put on muscle mass, you're going to have more inflammation and you're going to store more fat. One of the things about storing fat is that body fat has inflammatory compounds in it. It is not inert tissue. So the less body fat you have, the less inflammatory compounds you have in your body. And the less insulin you have around, the less stimulation of inflammatory cycles you have. So he does make a point that you're going to have less cardiovascular disease because a big part of cardiovascular disease is, in fact, guess what? Inflammation. So if you're spending 16 hours not stimulating those pathways, you might have overall less inflammation. So the intermittent fasting is usually that 16-8 model. He says if you skip breakfast, you can have a later dinner. But if you're not restricted when you're choosing to eat, Dr. Charles Seltzer says that breakfast may cause you to make poorer decisions later in the day. That's interesting. There's a suggestion that people who have breakfast, not eating breakfast will have you make poor decisions later in the day. People who have breakfast may have a lower weight than those who don't. If eating breakfast means you're eating less through the day, then you should eat it. But if you start eating breakfast and are still overeating at other meals, then you should consider skipping it. So if you tend to overeat all the time, skipping breakfast might be a helpful way to simply eat less. And some people do need some food to go work out. And that if you don't eat enough food, your workout's not going to go as well.
Right.
Now, for me, if I'm doing a short workout, you know, if I'm going to spin class, it's fine. I don't need to eat breakfast before spin class. If spin class is until 10 o'clock in the morning, I might have to eat a little something. And sometimes I make it to extreme spin. Extreme spin doesn't start till 9:45. And I'm like, you know what? I'm a bit peckish. And if I'm feeling a little hungry before the workout, because it's a really hard workout, I have a little bit of food in my bag. And like on Sunday, I had a mango chia bar and I had a bite of that. But I didn't have much. And then my water bottles are not calorie free. They have a little bit of calories in them. I mean, not very much, really, maybe 30 calories, if that. Because I have electrolyte drink in there, but it's very low calorie electrolyte drink. And then I eat later in the day. So if you still do want to have breakfast, what should you eat? Now that's another one of those, whatever works for you.
Yeah.
And that's what they say too. It really depends on, what works for you. But, most people think you should have some protein in it. So some people think skim milk, Greek yogurt. I don't really agree with the whole, they're saying skim milk because of the horrific fear of saturated fat, which I don't agree with. And I think if you're going to do Greek yogurt, that it's better to do whole milk Greek yogurt because the fats in organic dairy are actually very good for you. And there's some processing that happens that makes me concerned about the quality of the fats that may be left over in fat-reduced dairy. If you're not dairy intolerant, you can have dairy. There's controversy about dairy because dairy causes growth. And if you're trying to lose fat, it may help you lose fat and it may not. And which is interesting because Dr. Roz is not a huge fan of dairy. That his PGAN 365 diet that he put together doesn't include dairy. They has you do dairy substitutes. He just thinks that dairy is inflammatory and the truth is, dairy was created to help little babies to grow. That's its purpose. And whey and casein increase your insulin and cause growth. So if you're having some whey protein after you just did a nice resistance training workout, then that whey protein is going to be very bioavailable to help you build your muscles. But if you're just having, you know, whey and casein all the time, it may sabotage your fat loss efforts because it's raising your insulin. And it's telling your body, grow, grow, grow. That's its job. And remember that we are the only species that consumes dairy after the age of weaning.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to have protein with your breakfast, it depends on whether you're a vegetarian or a vegan or not. You could certainly have, if you are not vegetarian, you can have eggs. You can have any. There is no breakfast police. You can have whatever you want, whatever you can tolerate. Jewish people like to have bagels and lox for breakfast. And if you're trying to skip the bagel, or you could cut the bagel way down. I mean, I talk to people about they love their bagels and lox, or they just love their bagels. cut your bagel in half or cut your bagel in quarters. Have a quarter of the bagel and have a little more fish. Have a little more cream cheese, you know, and that's what I do. Cause I try not to have a whole bagel because bagels, you're in for 300 calories for a bagel, which if you're small and skinny, can work for you. If you're most people, that's too much food. It's too much carbs. Unless you are about to go embark upon a very long journey where you're going to do a lot of activity. If you're going to get over 1,000 calories of exercise in a day, have the whole bagel. But if you're not going to do that, if it's an ordinary work day and you're going to have maybe an hour of exercise or not, a whole bagel is going to be too much for you. So it's going to be too much carbs. So cut it in half, unless you have a high metabolism. But whatever you have, having some protein of any type would be a good one for you.
So our friend Billy and listener Billy says, try riding a century without breakfast.
Right, exactly. Well, and to be fair, if I have to, and he's right, he's not wrong. And for me, if I have to travel somewhere and I have to get up at 5:30 or 6 in the morning and I'm expected to be on my bike, we'll say take the P2P ride, the Plymouth to Provincetown ride, where we sleep in Plymouth and we get up in the morning and we're asked to be on our bikes in the 6 o'clock hour. I'm probably not going to eat before I get on my bike.
No.
But I am probably going to eat during the course of the ride. I'm absolutely going to eat, but my stomach is not ready for food. And when we have those TCC rides in the summer and we're expected to be there for 8 o'clock, I probably haven't eaten anything by the time I get there because my stomach's not asking for it. That's why I carry food with me. And that's why at the rest stop, I'll have something to eat. But I carry food with me and I wait until I'm hungry and I have food in my pockets that I can grab and eat while I'm on the bike. But there's no point in me eating when I'm not feeling hungry, even if I'm beginning a century ride, because I'll just feel sick. And the other thing to do is, if I'm going to ride a century ride, I am going to probably do some kind of carb loading or some kind of loading the night before. I'm going to eat a decent meal the night before so I, you know, top off my glycogen stores. And then I should really have some glycine. By the way, glycine does a lot of cool things for you. But one of the things about glycine is that glycine helps you to have good glycogen stores that are then readily accessible for your next bout of exercise. I didn't do the glycine, and I got home so late I couldn't do anything last night, so I didn't have any glycine.
Friends on a glycine and Natural Calm.
Oh, magnesium.
Magnesium.
Yeah, it could
right
be.
Now.
There are many kinds. There are many brands of magnesium powder, and there are many forms of the magnesium powder. And that brand happens to be ionized magnesium citrate, but you can get powdered.
So what's the difference?
The ionized magnesium citrate is supposed to be very absorbable. The citric acid in it is good for me because I have a history of kidney stones. So if you have a history of kidney stones, citrate is good for you because it helps to keep oxalates, which is what you make kidney stones out of, in solution.
Okay.
So magnesium citrate is calming, and it will, it helps you to go to sleep. But citrate isn't always the best form. Some people get diarrhea from taking magnesium, from even just from that brand. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be ionized and very absorbable, and it may or may not be. But you can get magnesium glycinate, which is magnesium that's attached to glycine. It's very nice, and that tends to be more absorbable. Mm-hmm. So if you're trying to get yourself to get out of constipation, magnesium glycinate might not be the best form to use because it's easily absorbed. You want one that's a little less easily absorbed so it stays in your colon to draw the water to carry stuff out of you. So Natural Calm does work for that, because you can only absorb so much of it. And in fact, there are some people, I'm not saying that you should try this, but I'm just going to put out there that some people use Natural Calm instead of what they give you for colonoscopy prep.
Oh, really?
Yes, you take.
No kidding.
You take a couple of tablespoons of it, a couple of times instead
clean
of
you out,
because instead of teaspoon doses will calm you down and help you with regularity. Tablespoon doses will do something similar to what colonoscopy prep.
Oh,
and
lovely!
You have to. It has been shown to be effective, but I don't want to encourage you to do it. That's something you should definitely talk over with your doctor. Doing high dose magnesium as opposed to doing the prep that they give you. I have issues with the prep. The prep is supposed to
I know
be,
you do.
Yeah, Yeah, and people get sick on the prep too.
Right. That's why we're trying something different right now.
Yes, that's right. So anyway, it's very funny that Dr. Oz and Mark Wahlberg are back and forth over this. And Dr. Oz, you know, he wants to shut down breakfast completely. That's pretty funny.
Well, that's just a little extreme.
Yeah.
It's extreme. It really is.
Yeah, and
I
so
mean,
what he really wanted to do was to demonstrate the benefits of intermittent fasting. And he's not wrong. It's just that it's not something that works for everybody. So that was interesting. All right. So you know what? I'm going to go.
Okay.
Yeah. So should you intermittent fast? The answer is probably. Why probably? Because if you are among the, because chances are you're overweight. I mean, and don't take that the wrong way. 70% of Americans are overweight, and I am one of them. All right. Doesn't take much to be overweight. Okay. So, I mean, if you're 5'3" and you're 142 pounds, you're overweight. So it doesn't really take much. The benchmark for overweight is not very high. And, you know, you can look at a person who's 5'3" and they don't look fat to you, but they're in fact overweight. So that doesn't take much to be overweight. And 70% of Americans, in fact, are. So if you're overweight, it might benefit you to intermittent fast. And I'm not saying you should. I'm saying it might benefit you. And, of course, in the end, you have to do what works for you, for your life, for your physical activity, for your happiness, for your head, for all of that stuff. So, and on that note, I'm going to go. All right. So you have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the call-in talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can also email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM. WHUS Stores.